Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today for the Transgressors Memorial Service, remembering those who have transgressed against the great spirit of inclusion and must forever be cast into the abyss of dead names. Let's join Brother Andrew remembering those who we have lost.
This week, dear Otheran, is yet another opportunity to celebrate the triumphs of our cause, for today is not a day of holy cancellation, but a jubilant day of praise, all good news. Our first positivity report is for the burgeoning antigamy movement in the United States, which is being facilitated by modern technology. Antigamists, as you might guess, are people who do not want to be married, but who are still interested in having children. What some are calling the babies without vows movement, or offspring minus the ring subculture, is made up of people who want the personal satisfaction of raising another human without all the entanglements and complexities of having to share their lives with another adult. Several apps cater to such people in a variety of commitment-free flavors. Just a Baby is a dating-like app where instead of romantic partners, you're swiping for compatible egg and sperm donors or co-parents. The idea is to create a relationship similar to that of an amicably divorced couple, agreeing to share the burdens of raising a child together without any love lost between the adults. Modamily specifically focuses on people who want children, but for those who only want to have them with friends, not with romantic partners. Friends without benefits, you might say. And Co-Parent Match and Pollen Tree both help people find platonic co-parenting partners. Thus, instead of trusting in marriage itself to use parenthood and the stresses it brings to purge romance from a regular marriage, these people are skipping the painful desexification process entirely and jumping ahead to the sex-free detente phase, or what some people refer to as the I have a headache tonight for the next 18 years stage right from the start. What a beautiful assault on that oppressive, anachronistic, and hopelessly religious institution of the patriarchy, monogamy. As 483rd wave feminism has taught us, covenantal, unconditional, sexually exclusive marriage to a single person for the rest of your life, for good or for bad, in sickness and in health, until death do you part, is an absurd and wicked system designed to enslave women and turn them into barefoot domesticated tradwives, begging for financial support from their overlord husbands, instead of flourishing into the equal participants in the spiritually fulfilling world of jobs and bosses, which has long been denied to them. If there is anything, any one single essential thing that has always stood at the heart of Christianity and Western so-called civilization, it's been the nuclear family, dad, mom, and progeny. That's why we have always taught that the best way to eradicate Christianity and disrupt that annoying faith in Christ so many people have has always been to undermine marriage in any way possible. And clearly the best way to do that is to separate sex from procreation and from commitment, and from sacrificial love, and from permanence. Premarital sex, pornography, contraception, abortion, divorce, and every other deviation from the so-called trad family have all been part of the process of overthrowing Christianity and Western civilization in favor of the genderless, atheistic new age of sexual liberation, enlightenment, and bland grayscale boredom we dream of. And finally, the moment is here. Instead of being born into a permanent relationship that shows unconditional love between the opposite gender spouses, children now can be born into the insecure temporary scenario of being wanted, at least in the beginning, by two people who met a few weeks before and have nothing holding them permanently together. Just think of how fulfilling this will be for those children. This truly is a glorious development, and we sing forth with our loudest joyful wailing that marriage is dead, antigamy is here, and if all goes well, no child will ever need to know the safety and security of being born to parents who committed their lives to each other forever, ever again. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
Second, the city of Amsterdam has become the very first capital in the world to ban public ads for fossil fuels, airline travel, and meat. Oh, Gaia-luia! What a glorious day! Noticing that their public ads did not jibe with their goal of becoming carbon neutral by 2050, the Dutch city decided that it made no sense to be actively pursuing green policies as a government while allowing the planet-killing forces of carnivoria, petroleum, and air travel to use public spaces to promote the opposite. Once they realized that it's okay to highly regulate ads for alcohol and tobacco products, it was just a simple step to conclude that ads for eating meat, driving, and flying are just as dangerous as killing your lungs or your liver through substance abuse, and thus anything encouraged that such activity could be banned. As Anneke Verhoef of the Dutch Green Left Party told the BBC, quote, "I mean, If you want to be leading in climate policies and you rent out your walls to exactly the opposite, then what are you doing? And to think, all it took was a little abandonment of free speech, something we've never really believed in anyhow. When asked whether this loss of freedom is a problem for her constituents, Ankie Baker, the leader of the Dutch Party for the Animals, said this move actually expands freedom when you think of it. Everybody can just make their own decisions, but actually we are trying to get the big companies not to tell us all the time what we need to eat and buy. So in a way, we're giving people more freedom because they can make their own choice, right? Such an elegant gaslight. When someone says you're restricting freedom, just pretend you're actually increasing it and hope they can't do logic. Wonderful move. Of course, this tracks very tightly with our own political principles, since the only reason we say we believe in freedom of speech is to protect our political speech until we have enough power to stop other people from saying things we dislike. That's because we believe that words change beliefs and beliefs produce actions, so the constant marketing of planet-killing evils like pork, planes, and petrol is coercing people to engage in those activities, which they wouldn't were it not for the persuasion of the propaganda. Now, it is true, thus far, Amsterdam has not seen fit to expand the program to its logical end, in which the greener a company is, the more its ads will be subsidized by the government, and the less green a company is, the more ads it will be taxed as a punishment to support the greener competitors. If the government isn't here to lead us in the practice of holy virtue signaling by suppressing bad speech and favoring good speech, well, I just don't know what a government is even for anymore. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
Finally, this week's mahogany and pearwood sitar of superiority 14 bamboo shoots goes to a very unlikely hero. Prepare yourselves. Pope Leo XIV, or as Her Highness Ilhan Omar would say it, Pope Leo Xiva.
The last time the Alien Enemies Act was invoked, it was used during World War XI.
Now, I know, it might seem a bit radical of us to present the leader of the Roman Catholic Church with such an esteemed instrument of spiritual power as the sitar of superiority, but hear me out. Or, to put the matter more accurately, hear him out.
First of all, I think it's very important to understand that the unity or division of the church should not revolve around sexual matters.
Now, be honest. Even with all the rumors about a liberalizing of the centuries-old doctrines of traditional sexual morality in the church as derived from the Bible, did you ever dream we would come to the day when the Pope himself would be telling Catholics that views on sexual morality should not define the church and orthodoxy? Us either. But here we are. What began as priests wanting Pope Francis's permission to bless same-sex Catholic couples apart from the sacrament of marriage has now become Pope Leo saying that sexual morality isn't even essential doctrine in the Catholic Church anymore.
We tend to think that when the church is talking about morality, that the only issue of morality is sexual. And in reality, I believe there are much greater, more important issues such as justice, equality, freedom of men and women, freedom of religion, that would all take priority before that particular issue.
Frankly, this is just amazing. He could almost be one of us. Does this mean the Catholic Church will no longer consider premarital or homosexual or extramarital behavior to be sinful? Does it mean divorced people will be able to take communion? We really don't know, and he hasn't exactly said. But it sure does change things for Catholics when the Pope rejects the New Testament's teaching on sexual sin being as great in seriousness as any other sin, and instead relegates it to at best a second-class status, sort of a moral misdemeanor, if you will. Now, it is true, we don't love him implying that there still is such a thing as lower-level sin or B-grade fornication. We'd certainly prefer him to say that all sexual activity is perfectly fine as long as it is validated within the bounds of the most holy sacrament of mutual consent agreements. But to get a Catholic leader to say sexual sin isn't so bad, after all, is a major accomplishment. A radical evolution, you might say, for the head of the Holy See. So good for you, Pope Leo the Xiva, for finally bringing the Catholic Church into modernity. That's one small sentence for a man, but one giant leap for acronym kind into the MMIist century. Benefactum, Your Excellency. Benefactum. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
And now, brethren, sistren, and otheren, having been cleansed of these hurtful words, give each other the holy virtue signal, and go forth and transgress no more.